Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR. Well, everybody, welcome, welcome, welcome to the show. And it is a gorgeous day out there and a beautiful night. We've been blessed with this beautiful hot weather. So I hope everybody's using lots of sunscreen and taking good care of yourself. One of the things I love, speaking of hot, is we have one of my favorite guests on who has not been on for a while, but she has literally been changing the world in so many cool ways, and she's been doing this for a very long time. I'm lucky enough to call this beautiful woman my soul sister. She's also an incredible coach. She is the founder of the Passion Foundation, and she has done so much wonderful work all around the world, and I'm very excited to welcome back Loretta Cella. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Caroline, again.
Thank you. And I forgot to say, you're also a change management consultant as well, so you do things for corporate as well as not-for-profit and individuals and community, so it's pretty cool, your wonderful three pillars approach.
Thank you. Something I, you know, I absolutely love doing is providing people opportunity to kind of reach their full potential, whatever that looks like in the world for them. So it's exciting, some of the things that are happening and things that are upcoming.
I am so excited about all the stuff that you're doing. For those who are not familiar with Passion Foundation specifically, did you want to share a little bit about that for our listeners?
Sure. Passion Foundation is a registered charity that we started in 2007. With the sole purpose of helping young women 11 to 24 years of age to live to their full potential in the world. And we do that through leadership development and community capacity building.
That's pretty cool stuff. And I think it's so needed in the world, especially right now with a lot of the war that's going on in certain parts, a lot of the fighting, and even in our own backyard.
Yes, there, I mean, if you look at some of the things that are happening in our world right now, you'd think that with the amount of resources that we have, things would be getting better, but it seems like in a lot of ways, things are becoming more and more challenging.
No, it really does seem that way. What was I going to say in regards to that? You've got some really great stuff coming up next week, and I'm just too excited to wait, so can we share it with you? It's just pretty cool, so...
Yeah, so we have a few months ago, we had, unfortunately, a challenge in our family where my sister went through a domestic incident. And unfortunately, they lost their house, and my niece, 14, really stepped up during the situation, during the crisis, and it was quite a hero and rescued my sister and my nephew from the fire that they were in. And as a result of that, because of what I do in the world, I proposed an opportunity to my niece to do something to create change. And by change, I mean specifically when we're talking about domestic violence, we often focus on the women that are directly impacted by the violence, but we forget about sometimes the children around that. And so I proposed an opportunity for her to do something different, not only to help change the cycle for herself, but also for other young women. And so she ran with it, and we now have a program that will be starting next week called, and she named it, which is really exciting, is called Healing Our Hurting Hearts Club. And the idea is we'll work with a small group of her and her friends and in a leadership development program, and they will create Healing Our Hurting Hearts kits that will go, the objective is to go out to schools to provide counselors, administration, and social workers within the system to support young women around having proactive tools. And the number one thing that girls face is that they feel alone, so a greater sense of community, understanding, and support.
That's fantastic. Paint me a picture of what the kit looks like.
So the kit, well, the neat thing is we don't quite know yet because the girls will actually be creating it. So so far some of the ideas that that they've come up with, it'll have an all-encompassing, hitting the different parts of self. So it'll focus on some type of physical activity and most likely be some type of yoga or which I know you appreciate, Caroline, with your training that's happening right now. So it'll probably have some type of yoga and other physical activity. It'll have some learning and so just kind of stimulate the mind on some of the challenges that we face. It'll have the emotional side of things. So Passion Foundation doesn't focus on any type of therapy or counseling. We focus on the coaching approach. Mm-hmm. So really helping the girls to create some critical thinking, self-awareness, and development of their emotional intelligence. And then it'll actually tie into some other crafts and arts. We're looking at bringing Kat Thorson, who I think you know,
yes,
who is
I
one
do.
Of Vancouver's most amazing art therapists. Mm-hmm. And looking, bringing her in to do art therapy through sock monkey making. So it'll have a wide range of aspects. But the girls, one thing I love about this, it'll be a peer-to-peer model, and the girls will actually be the ones who will be creating the kit, and then we'll tap into our resource pool in the community of phenomenal volunteers. Mm-hmm. To help to facilitate those kits and actually have kind of like a small suitcase and in a pretty little package that will go out to schools.
That sounds pretty incredible. And I think the teens, it's so important to be doing work with them at that age as well. And especially in regards to just patterns repeat sometimes. So by being able to take a coaching approach in terms of tools to create change, especially at that age, I think is key.
Yeah, I think a lot of the time what happens is we say, you know, here are the statistics, here's mm-hmm. what's happening, here's what the warning signs that you need to watch out for, but we don't actually teach the development of the critical thinking that allows us to make healthier choices. So it kind of steers away from some of those things that become, you know, toxic, harmful, whether it's through other people or internally through self-harm.
Yes. That makes perfect sense. And especially things like cutting, the depression, etc.
Yeah.
It's key.
Yeah. And that's oftentimes that, you know, having worked with what are the last statistics? Over 500 girls in 7 countries in the last 7 years. You know, the number one thing that girls tell us is, one, they felt that they were alone, and so they carried the weight, a lot of the weight by themselves, regardless of what the challenge that they face in the world. And then oftentimes what happens is they turn, rather than turning outwards, they turn inwards. And so the depression, the anxiety, the cutting, the eating disorders, there's just a gamut of challenges that girls face depending, you know, where they are in the world and what's happening, and really hoping that we can create some change with that.
No, that sounds amazing. For your niece, being able to be proactive and to move forward, how has this helped in terms of just for herself right now, just because she's had a lot to deal with this last year?
Wow, has she ever? And she will, you know, for a really long time to come.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't speak too much to kind of, you know, where she's at in kind of her development, but I can talk about what I've seen.
Mm.
And what I've seen is a young woman who has experienced a horrific experience, if you saw some of the details in the news and stuff, it was all over the news. It was one of the most horrific things ever. And what she's done with the opportunity that was presented to her is run with it. So she started to pull together statistics, and she started to talk to people in her community, and she started to, say, I have this idea. And she's used it really to propel herself in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes what happens is we spiral downwards
yes.
first, and then we kind of start to come up, and we ride this roller coaster for a while when we go through a grieving process or a traumatic, you know, event. And what I've seen is a young woman who has blossomed into, okay, you know what, this is horrible, this happened to me, and it sucks, it sucks that, you know, my life has changed, but you know what? I have something that I can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really given her, you know, from what I can see on the outside, it's given her some purpose and some drive. And she's just a beautiful, beautiful young woman who, you know, really sees now. She says, I can help other people, you know, I can help other people. So.
No, I think it's incredible. You said that around the world, when you've worked with girls, one of the big things is they tend to turn inwards and feel very alone is the word that you used, almost like isolation. In different parts of the world, depending on what women are dealing with, and I should say girls as opposed to women, what are some other key things that you're seeing and some big differences that might have surprised you when you went to different countries that you weren't expecting?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, there's every country seems to be a little bit different.
Hmm.
We were just recently in South Africa,
mm-hmm.
A couple months ago, working with a group of through the Helderberg Rape Crisis Center, and working with a group of incest survivors. And what a beautiful experience that was! And for them, a lot of it is not having a voice. So nobody had ever asked them how they were feeling or what they had experienced. It was only that one group that they met with, you know, once every 2 weeks that they got to meet in like a counseling type of session. But often the poverty, the only belief for them was like, you know, you have a child, you get married, and there's no career. There's no, you know, that piece of it. A lot of anger. And then a lot of transformation. So once you give them the space, it's like, okay, now I want to do this. Now I want to see this happen. And now they're creating a community project out there, and we're excited to see how that goes. In Mexico, which we were in Yucatan earlier this year in January, we saw a lot of the girls, not so much of a voice, but a lot of challenges around abandonment with their fathers. And so not having a strong father figure, and then the mother kind of trying to figure out how she's going to sustain herself outside of that. So for them, it was really what they were seeing, they were modeling. And so it was really about modeling a new and different way of being in the world. And they have some amazing local volunteers that are working with those girls to help them see what healthy relationships look like,
mm-hmm.
And see what education and possibilities can create. And they created some amazing programs out there. And it's exciting to see what it develop. And now we're going to actually get a whole Latin American division that's being built out right now.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, yeah, each place is, you know, there's underlying thing is always the same. There's some differences. We're heading into Lebanon later this year, in a few months, and it'll be interesting to see some of the challenges that they face. But, you know, hypersexualization and drugs and alcohol, not so much. Self-harm has been an issue, and then, you know, with limited resources, some of the things that they resort to because of it.
Now that makes a lot of sense. In terms of moving forward, you've got some stuff coming up with the Global Sorority as well, don't you, coming up with Lebanon?
Yeah, so Passion Foundation works on a local level with a global initiative, which is called Global Sorority. And the idea was to create a sisterhood so that our work locally and girls, more particularly locally, can have a connection to girls in other places of the world because the issues are, you know, are all the same. The circumstances are different often, but the issues are identical. And that's one is, like, I don't have a voice. The never been taught to critically think or think about different possibilities outside of their environment. And then a lack of self-sustaining and resources and community and support. And so this trip is actually coming up is really exciting because we're going to be working with a group in Surrey, BC, at an elementary school. And we'll be working with a school in Beirut in Lebanon who will also then be working, this is the other piece of it, working with a group in a refugee camp.
Oh my goodness.
So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be working with the group here in Surrey. We'll be putting them through the Elements of Success Leadership Program, which is something that I created years ago that all the girls go through. Mm-hmm. They'll create a community project. And then part of their community project will connect with the group at the American Community School in Beirut, who will then have the same training just before we hit the marathon. I'll talk about the marathon in a minute. And then they'll connect and we'll connect with the girls, the young women in the refugee camp. And then it'll circle back home.
Wow.
So this is the first time we've had this kind of triangle, and it's really, really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
The other component of it, and the reason why this came to be, and I think you might know her, Sarah Jameson.
Yes.
And so she approached me late last year, and said, it's my final run. She has a 10-year passion project of raising money for charities, and the goal was $1 million in 10 years. She's raised $1.4 million, I believe, which is just phenomenal. And she says, my last project, I would like, you know, global sorority or global initiative to benefit from it.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's really exciting. So Sarah will be running, we partnered with the Beirut Marathon. They're amazing over there. Just really, really excited to do that. And Sarah has also challenged me to run that marathon. So I've been training.
I was just going to ask, do you run?
Yeah.
Okay. Good for you.
Yeah. So I've been training quite diligently. We'll see. My capacity is getting better and better by the week, which is exciting. And so the goal is that we'll be running the marathon on November 9th, and we'll be heading there a week early to do the leadership training. And then the filming as we go, because as we go, we do the filming to get a record and to share as dialogue in North America. And it's really exciting. And I'm looking forward to this really big project.
Kudos, my dear friend. That is absolutely fantastic. How much are you running right now?
Right now, if I look at my little wonderful sheet that my coach did, I think I'm running about anywhere from 26 to 30 kilometers a week.
That's, well, it's not bad. So, because you did a half marathon before, didn't you, if I remember correctly?
I did last year, yes.
To raise money for Passion Foundation. I think it was the Scotiabank one. Mm-hmm. Gotta love Facebook. I'm able to cyberstalk you. And I can't believe I just said that on air. So, considering what we're talking about. So
yeah.
It was a very bad joke. Sorry, listeners
it's
out there.
We get it.
Wow.
I'm getting up there, and when you know, this is the first time I've obviously done the marathon training, and it's like a job.
Yeah,
it's like an additional job every day. There's at least anywhere from 30 minutes on rest days to up to 2 hours worth of, additional work. It's nothing like, obviously, training for an Ironman or a triathlon, or which my brother's been doing lately. But, it just adds when you've already got a, 60-hour work week plus school.
Yeah, because you did your master's, and are you doing your PhD right now?
No, I'm just in the process of finishing my master's degree.
Cool.
And I'll be done by, knock on wood, by September, or sorry, by not by September, by December. And that's, it's been a phenomenal process. And PhD may be in my future. We'll see. We'll see.
That's pretty exciting, Loretta.
Yeah, it's been quite the last couple of years, to say the least. Yeah.
So what was the biggest shift, do you find? Because you've been doing some amazing work for the last 15 years. And what I love is the fact that you continue to challenge yourself and continue to grow. And through that, the scope and the reach and the shift in the projects that you create, and co-create with the girls, it's really exciting to watch. It's beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, I think, you know, interesting enough, this biggest shift is this master's degree that I've been taking at Royal Rose University. And the expansiveness, I mean, I went to school, you know, I can say, I decided to go back to school for three reasons. And actually, I was told this recently was in a proposal kind of for a big contract, and you know, they're saying, "Why did you choose to go back and go to school?" And so I told them the reasons. And the first reason was that Passion Foundation reached a bit of a plateau, and so I couldn't figure out how, coming from frontline and you know, working in Toronto, one of the sub ghettos, and you know, really frontline, to running an organization is a big shift. As you know, and so I lacked some of the skills, and I quickly realized it was my mentality and my lack of education in certain areas, and so that's one of the reasons why I went back to school. The other reason why is because I always tell girls and young women that I work with or that I mentor through, you know, that I've mentored over the years, and that always challenge yourself, always expand. Because when you're not learning, one, your brain is dying. Two is that you're limiting your possibilities. So really look at how you can expand yourself mentally and skills and development, because it'll support you in sustainability later on. When you focus too much on one thing, sometimes it becomes hard to find what you know, sustainability. The other thing is that my dad has his grade 5 education, and he immigrated to this country, and one of the big things to him is education. And I had a hard time with education because the way that I learn, which is much different than the academic world, and so I wanted to challenge myself to go through that process. And I wanted to do it partly for him. He made a ton of sacrifices for us growing up. And part of what I wanted was an opportunity to show him, hey, you didn't make those sacrifices for nothing. And so that was really, really important to me. I don't think he knows that, but he will when I walk across that stage, that's for sure. it's really expanded me on more levels than I can possibly imagine as a leader, as an understanding processes and systems that, you know, evolve around this world. And then the other part of it is the network of people that, I mean, my cohort is phenomenal. They're from across Canada, across sectors. And one of the reasons why we went to Mexico was because one of my cohort classmates is living down there right now. And was working with this organization and these group of girls, and said, "Why don't you guys come down, and we'll work with you?" So, really amazing partnerships and collaboration.
That's really exciting. I think that's incredibly exciting.
Yeah, it's neat to have those. Part of everything that I've based my work around is around community and collaboration. I think too many people do things by themselves, and that's where we get into a lot of conflict in the world, because it creates power struggles, and it creates resource division, versus if we're sharing resources together in community, we can make things go a lot farther.
No, that's very true. And I think in Canada, especially just with some of the major shifts with the charitable sector as well. It's huge.
And you know, you see it a lot in other places in the world where the collaboration, it's not, there's no effort, it just happens. You know, where it's like they focus on one thing, but they cross over in the same population and they have extra resources, or they are, you know, looking for an opportunity. And those just kind of interweave where, you know, a lot of places, and in Vancouver in particular, and I can't remember how many years ago, I think it maybe was 12 years ago, where the government took out a lot of money when it came to seniors and youth and social services. And so people started fighting for dollars and cents. So it became about dollars and cents versus the populations being served. I need to survive. And so when you get into survival mode, you're more likely to take rather than give.
Yes.
So, I mean, that happens in relationships is, you know, when people aren't, you know, in an intimate relationship or any close relationship, is that when one person's not getting their needs met, they start to kind of try to take more or retreat more, or they're not in partnership and not in a giving state.
No. That is so true. And I'm going to go full circle on this because I think that's why it's so vital, the work that you're doing for these young girls. Because in case any of our listeners are listening going, well, what about boys? I think that if there is the healing going on with the girls, and hopefully it's somebody else's journey in regards to doing some work with the young boys as well. But I think it's just so key. It makes such a huge difference. So then that way patterns don't repeat. Things start to shift. They start to evolve. And through that, we change the fabric of our societies.
Yeah, and I think that you and I have talked a little bit about that before. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, right now, I started doing this gender-specific leadership work before it became a thing, mm-hmm. right? And I had no idea that it was going to become this huge, massive thing. but what has happened, though, and I've seen this quite a bit, and I think a lot of organizations are starting to see this, is that young boys and young men are evolving in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not that necessarily that support. And so girls are becoming, and young women are becoming stronger, more vocal, critical thinking is higher, etc. And a lot of what's happening with the boys and young men is it's like a shift in energy, more sensitive, wanting to talk about their feelings a little bit more, but not necessarily having the resources and tools to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next, I would say, my prediction, I've had some conversations, the next 5 years or so, people really need to start really looking at genderless programs, gender integration programs.
And paint me a picture of what a gender integration program would look like.
So one of the things that I have been exploring, and I keep trying to dive into it sooner than I have the capacity to do, and so I'm working on stopping to do that. And so what it would look like in particular with Passion Foundation, I've had some general conversations actually with some people, and we'll see how it goes, but basically doing leadership development and bringing them together at a certain aspect in our program.
Mm.
So they're getting the same language, they're getting the same tools, they're getting the same resources, but it's based on gender because there is differences,
yes.
Whether we want to admit it to know, there's some differences, right? But there's a way of integrating those differences. So there's learning opportunity, resource opportunity, and collaboration opportunity versus like girls are over here, boys are over here. And so one of the ways that we're looking at doing that is through the elements of success, which is the model that I created. At the end of the learning, the groups create a community project. So they're solidifying their leadership, they're enhancing their resumes, they're working as a team, collaborating, they're practicing all the tools that they're learning for the 6 weeks beforehand. Bringing them together during the collaboration of a community project or assisting each other's projects.
Hmm.
So the boys are helping the girls and the girls are helping the boys. However they choose to collaborate, they're given a choice of how they collaborate together within their community projects. I think that that's going to be a really important development that we're going to need to make moving forward.
No, that makes sense. And that probably looks different, perhaps, in different cities all around the world.
Yes. I mean, we often have boys that come up to us. I think my favorite was when we were in Uganda a couple years ago, and Tia and I had my partner in San Diego for Global Sorority. We had boys come up to her like, Madame, why do you not do things for the boys? And they're like, you know what? We do in a different type of way. And so we had a bit of a chat, and we talked to the principal, the headmaster of the school, and we said, can we bring some of these boys in? These boys are curious. They want to know what's happening. When we're talking about gender roles with the girls, we should be talking about these with the boys. And so Tia was fantastic. We had a blackboard up there, and she drew a soccer field. and explain to the boys that this is the boys' team and the girls' team, and this is what the girls, you know, half of the field looks like, and this is what the boys' half of the field looks like. And our goal was not to make the girls stronger than the boys. The goal was to actually have an equal playing field,
mm-hmm.
and so that they can play together in a positive way.
I like that. That's awesome.
Yeah, and so that's, I mean, our work is not about empowering young women to have more power over. The idea is to have more power in equality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really to see themselves that I feel, and I'll use myself an example, is that I feel I'm as good as or have the capacity of or the capability of any of my counterparts, whether they're male or female.
I think that's pretty cool. In regards to some of the work you're doing with, in regards to gender specific, in terms of Vancouver and in other parts of the world as well, has anything come up in the work that you've done with the girls in regards to just creating safe spaces and just more empathy and understanding with the trans community?
Yeah, which is a big topic right now in Vancouver. Well, interesting enough, we actually had an individual in one of our groups that identified differently,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think he knew what that looked like, but he wanted to be in the group, and so there was the girls. It was fascinating because the girls didn't even question it. They're like, "Of course, you can come in," and so we don't. One of the things that we don't do, which is much different than a lot of organizations, we don't place labels. So we won't place a label, which disqualifies us, I think, for a lot of funding opportunities. but I won't change it. I think, you know, people in general have enough labels on them as it is.
Yes.
What we do, we don't talk about the specific topics unless they bring the topics up or the labels up. And so, when it comes to specifically around gender identity really anything, it could be race, it could be, it doesn't matter. We don't have any specific criteria or information around unless they're engaging or want it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, a lot of the youth that we've worked with are open to exploring possibilities and having discussions.
Which is so key.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what we really focus on. I mean, our work is, it includes all elements. So in every single, you know, module of the leadership, there is instruction, information sharing, there is literacy development through reflective writing, conversation, artwork, collaboration. And we really challenge them to really think and develop outside the box wherever possible. And so when they're finished the leadership training, they're in that mind space and a lot more aware of what's happening in their communities.
Which is a really, really exciting piece. Because I think sometimes we, especially in Vancouver, sometimes it's hard not to get stuck in what I'd describe as first world problems. And not just for youth, but just in general. And I think it's really important to be able to see full picture.
Yeah, and I think that there is, I feel that there's lots of possibility to create more opportunity around that. And to look, rather than kind of, you know, my cell phone doesn't work and, I can't get on Facebook this moment and, you know, whatever it is that we experience in high technologies, high developed areas,
mm-hmm.
There's an opportunity through, you know, community, getting involved in the community mm-hmm. on a grassroots level, whether it's, you know, my big thing is getting out in my garden. And, you know, pulling out the weeds and watering, you know, my carrots and, you know, all my herbs and, getting people involved in more of those type of processes, out in nature and chatting with one another. You know, I think that we often kind of our head down and go do, be, have, take, buy, versus, you know, what we can do around connecting with one another and getting out of the that mode of what's the word I'm looking for? Accumulating more.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. Miss Loretta, what's next for you? Because you have so much, and my gut tells me you've probably got more. So I have to ask that question.
A vacation, Caroline. I don't even know what that looks like. No. You know, there's a couple things on this stream. Part of what we're doing right now is with Passion Foundation, through actually my master's degree and my research, is looking at developing a strategic and sustainable community plan. And so how do we create more sustainable community partnerships? And so that's really going to be my focus over the next, you know, 6 or so months, is looking at the research that I've collected over the last couple months with about, I guess, close to 80 people. And then having my team of board of directors develop that plan. And so that's going to be really exciting to look at a 3-prong model. And so that will look at not just philanthropic donations, and grants. It'll look at a fee-for-service model, and it'll also look at the possibility of collaborative work that will reduce cost. So that's really exciting.
That is really exciting.
So, and I know you and I have done some of that, some of that work together in Frantic States, and, but it turns out really well, right?
But
how do you have a cleaner model? Right. And so some of the experiences that we've had is, how do you have a cleaner model? You know, what are some of the expectations? You know, having that data and that information to have a proper process in place to make it go smoother to make it go better each time as it goes forward. And so that's kind of what I'm working on now. And also in the side of whenever I get the inspiration, I'm writing my second book.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Congratulations.
Which is really exciting. Thank you. Yeah, it's exciting.
That's very exciting. Do you care to share?
Sure. Yeah. So it's a model that's similar to the one that I've got, but it's focused on 3. And actually, it was interesting. We're in South Africa. I'll tell you this little story. We're in South Africa in Cape Town. And I'm like, you know, I've been kind of thinking like, hey, the second book, I know it's coming. I can feel it. I just don't know kind of what's going on. And we're on our way back from the Penguin Beach. And Boulder Beach, I think it's called. I don't know. The name's missing right now. But we're on the way back from this beach where all these little penguins are kind of moving around. And I'm you know, feeling all giddy because I just saw a bunch of penguins on the beach. We're on the way back. And all of a sudden, I'm like, somebody give me a pen and paper. Somebody give me a pen and paper. And I just jotted down about 15 minutes, jotted down the outline of the book.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's just sometimes it just like, oh, it comes to me. And so this book in particular, the name is still floating a bit, but it focuses on 3 parts of sustainable development. And I'm trying to stay away from the word leadership because it's a little bit overused. But it focuses on, you know, who am I in the world? You know, from a very self and egocentric place to who am I in my community? And how do I organize and support myself in and around my community? And then the last piece is, who am I as a leader? Who am I in the world at large? And what is my mission, my values, and how do I present that to the world in a way that's supportive of something that I'm passionate or intrigues me and that drives kind of my purpose moving forward? So that's kind of what I've been working on, and it'll be part information and some research base, but it'll be more of kind of a lot of coaching questions of like, what does that mean for you and how do you apply that? And then it'll eventually, I'm sure like everything else in my life, will turn into some type of course, some type of, you know, webinar or some type of course that I will share with others, and the first book, The Elements of Success, that was solely used for training and internal purposes. So you can't get that anywhere. Everybody says, where can I get a copy? I'm like, you can't. Because there's, you have to have a certain level of knowledge of coaching to be able to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm developing a manual for teachers right now for that. But yeah, this book will be more of you can go at your own pace or do it within a group. So
that's pretty cool. You might have to do the whole book club thing.
Well, interesting enough, somebody actually said that to me. Somebody said to me, you know, like, one, can I put a little, actually I had a meeting 2 weeks ago, they're like, can I just put a deposit down for the book now? And I thought, oh, that felt so good, you know, when somebody says that to you when I explain kind of in detail what the book's about. And she said, you should get, you know, a book club or a group together to go through that process. And I thought, yeah, what a fascinating way of also testing the model too, right? Is, you know, getting a group together and start a book club with it.
Well, Danielle Laporte did that with the Desire Map. So
she did.
And it seemed fairly popular. So, and I'd love to see your book. So
thank you.
That way.
So. Well, it's a great way to hold accountable. And I think, you know, in a lot of the stuff that I'm doing right now, there's a lot of talk about accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so when you're working by yourself, depending on your type of personality, depending on your level of independence, you will get X amount of stuff done. But when you have a group around you that's keeping you on track or that is motivating you when you're feeling a little off, you will do so much more than when you're doing them by yourself and having an off day or whatever's going on.
That makes perfect sense. And having that community around, you don't feel isolated when things go sideways.
And if there's learning that, like, you know, I don't understand why I keep hitting this, you know, this wall. Why can't I get past it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have people around you that you float ideas off of, that collaborative, you know, way of seeing, that critical thinking development can go a long way.
It really can. It really can. And I think it's something that's really needed, especially right now, where I know Vancouver Foundation did their event, that survey, where they were saying that, like, just so many people in Metro Vancouver don't feel part of community. They feel isolated and alone. And then that kind of echoes what you were saying earlier about the fact that a lot of times the young girls feel alone no matter what part of the world. So mm-hmm. having that community around them when they are feeling that way, I think, is so important. And it holds people accountable in such a bit different way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No, that's exciting.
Yeah, I wish I had the ability to stay still a little bit more. You know, I try. I really do, you know, try. But I just get so pumped and excited. I wanted to say jazz there for a second. I get so
jazz hands. I couldn't resist.
You know, there's just, you know, one of my core fundamental values sits around community and the need to be of support and the need to receive support. And I think that, you know, part of that is because I've seen so many people do things alone. I think that, you know, I get excited because I see the possibilities. And I see, you know, especially with the girls that we work with, when they get in those groups and they start their community projects and when the ideas start going and the responsibility, like, you can hand them $100. You know, or $50 a week to go and buy the supplies for, you know, their project, and they're bringing you back receipts, you know, where, you know, maybe a few months before, they may or may not have bought, you know, the stuff. And this is like the level of accountability and the level of a professionalism. We had one group actually just recently this year that was actually the first in their district to get paid to run a peer mentor program. And so these grade 11 and 12 girls supported a group of grade 6 and grade 7 girls to transition to the high school, and we're doing weekly activities with them. And I didn't even have to be there. Like, they had it all planned out. They had, you know, and through the help of their community coordinator. And it's just amazing to watch that process and watch them through their graduation and, mm-hmm. and really excited about the future. And because they have each other, right, there's that community, there's the resources, and then there becomes the opportunity because they're not willing to stop until they get to where they want to go.
Mm-hmm. And that's such a cool place to be where you don't want to stop until you're ready. You're going to be where you're going to go.
Yeah.
That's a pretty amazing place to be.
Yeah. I mean, powerful, you know, I also say there's a lot of people that do a little too much sometimes. and so there's a balance, right? There's a balance of taking care of yourself before you start taking care of, you know, other people or the things that are happening in the community. So
it's very true. And I know I'm guilty of being one of those people at times. So
yeah.
And so with that, I can totally, on a personal level, totally go there to the point where it's actually affected relationships in my life, both with partners as well as with family and friends.
Yeah.
So I've been there, done that, and it's really nice to really seek balance. So it comes from a really holistic point. I think the best description I've heard of it in the last while has been basically you make sure your cup is so full, so then you can't help but let things pour out.
I like that.
It's really cool. A yoga teacher actually mentioned it. I think it was Danielle Higginbottom. So,
and I probably, oh yeah, well, great.
Which I thought was pretty cool.
So. Mm-hmm. No, it's a really great saying.
Mm-hmm. No, it's really, really, really key. If somebody is a young girl who's listening to this right now and wants to get involved with the project that you're starting next week or some of the other projects through Passion Foundation or through Global Sorority, what's the best way and what are the steps? Obviously, to send you an email, but and I'm going to be more specific here because I my gut tells me you probably get just as many emails as I do. And sometimes it's probably like, I want to get involved, which is like, but just basically, how would you like those emails to go?
Yeah. So actually that's a really great question because, I get a lot of, a decent amount of inquiries. And sometimes they're not very clear. And so a lot of people know I want to do something, but there is, I spend a lot of time trying to figure out what people want to do.
Yes.
And so it becomes a bit challenging for me. And so the best thing I always tell people to do is write an email in the subject line before they even actually write an email. Look at the website, get an idea of what we do, type, you know, Passion Foundation or Global Sorority into Google to get some more information. There's lots of videos and things out there. Find some information in the subject line because of all the emails I get, seeking volunteer opportunity or looking for internship or whatever it might be, and put that in the subject line. And then in the email, attach your resume, specific areas of interest, why you chose Passion Foundation or Global Sorority as an area that you wanted to give back to, and if you don't hear, but this is another thing, is if they don't hear back right away, I may email 2 or 3 days later and then don't hear anything back. So really making sure that you're committed. We require 6-month commitment from volunteers with about 10 hours a month. So that's 2 hours a week of time, which is not a heck of a lot. And you know, share a little bit. We've had some fantastic people lately reach out to us. Excited to at our volunteers. We've got such amazing volunteers. And we have some events coming up. So there's people that love to do get involved with some, you know, community volunteering network events. We've got some great little events coming up. One will be helping to raise money for Lebanon. Wow, it's late.
It could be a funny, funny fundraiser. Maybe it could be a bunch of comedians who want to get together and do some improv and raise some cash for you.
Well, you know, funny story is that we decided to, we were talking with Sarah Jameson or emailing back and forth, and we thought we'd call it Shoe Heroes because we're running, right? So everybody would wear their favorite pair of sneaks at the event. And so we'd have kind of all the different shoe heroes out there in the world.
Oh, that's great.
But yeah, we'll have a funny twist to this one, I'm sure. Yeah, it's September 19th in Vancouver. But yeah, if there's any volunteers that love event stuff, we have that one. And then we have our holiday conscious cocktails that we will be holding in East Vancouver at a private location, and that's going to be a lot of fun and great conversation and a really fantastic group of women and men that will be joining us at that event.
That sounds pretty cool and very exciting, and may need to get out my shoes for that and cocktails. Are always quite lovely.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's always nice to mix things up, right? You like to go to those events that are, you know, kind of more relaxed, and it's just like, you know, after a Friday, head to the bar. It's a good cause, great food, great company, you know, that kind of thing. Versus, you know, something that has, you know, you're putting on your nice clothes and you're having a beautiful supper and you're having really, you know, strong intellectual and fun conversation and connections, and then it's going towards the great cause, right? We're 100% run by volunteers, yeah, it's a great way of bringing really awesome people together.
No, it sounds absolutely incredible. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me again. It's always so fun to connect with you when I get a chance to.
Me too. And maybe that will be one of those things. We'll make sure our cups are so full that they keep running over, so we'll have time for everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yay. Well, up next is actually not Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. I'm just on Facebook again, and it looks like the lovely Pyra will be on early for the Vampire's Ball, which is super cool. And you've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. And we will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. And if you're out and about on Saturday night, I am going to encourage you to please come out to a Love and Grace event. They are doing the after party at 560 for the, oh my goodness, after the Lady Gaga concert. So if you're interested in coming to that, I will be there that night. And it should be a lot of fun, a lot of fashion shows. And actually, I'm lying. It's actually at the Imperial. Wrong venue. But hopefully we will look forward to seeing you there, but you can check that out. And before I sign off, please, please, please check out passionfoundation.org as well for the lovely Loretta. Thank you. Have a beautiful night, everyone. Bye-bye. And I would never hide away from love. I and I would never walk away from love. It's love that's not true love. Never wonder which one of them she love. Which one of them she love. Then I say it's me she love. And I she me love. Hey, which one of them she love. Which one of them she love. Then I say it's me she love. And I she me love. With her beautiful smile and a smarting personality. Express without no fear, she make it clear, she talk with clarity. Love and compassion, and her heart is full of charity. Human rights, and now she stand up for equality. Natural beauty, she's not chasing after vanity. Keep the heavens clear, can't mix her up with no insanity. Love Mama Earth, and that's how she love her planet. Yeah. Don't owe me one thing, I can't even stand it, yeah. She could have her choice. I know, I know, I know, I know, I know. I'm blessed to have this girl in my life. Boom! But I and I would never run away from.
Queer Arts Festival, Regenerations, takes place in Vancouver from July 23rd to August 9th at the Roundhouse. This annual celebration brings together queer art from 27 nations, featuring 18 days of compelling exhibitions, transformative performances, and inspiring workshops. Experience the revolutionary power of art through cross-generational collaborations, artistic healing, and works of art from around the world. Tickets are now on sale at